Hi, I'm Paul, and you are listening to the Comic Book Rehab Podcast. Hi, I'm Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Very good start this week. I like it. All right, so we're going to talk about the books that came out February 7th?
Yes.
Oh, look at that. We're here on Saturday, the 10th. So we're going to talk about the books that came out on February 7th. And actually, as opposed to the last couple weeks in January, we've had quite a few books that came out this week. So the titles are a little bit more together because we only have 4 weeks as opposed to the 5 we had in January. And we definitely had some interesting reads this week. So I'm going to start off with the Weekly Avengers run with the Avengers No Surrender part. We on part 4 or 5?
I think you're on 4.
679. So basically, we get on this one here, we get a lot more background story. We find out what basically happens to Torch at the end of the last issue. He is basically frozen in a stasis, as was the other person from the Legion of Doom or Black Order. And they, because they're fighting, you find out a lot more. They're the ones playing the game, they are their players. The Earth is now just a playmat. And the Avengers and everything else are obstacles in their little game that they're playing. And as we found out in last issue, it's Grandmaster and the Challenger, which we get a whole lot of backstory in this one, where we find out that the Challenger actually was considered, he considered himself the Grandmaster originally and was banished.
Beaten, actually.
Well, he was beaten, but part of the game
he got banished.
Yeah, he got banished. So basically, we run through into the next part here in their phase, and we get all this backstory, and then we pretty much get our last page teaser, which made Dave happy, and I just realized I didn't do the introductions around. So basically, that last page was really great because we now have the reveal that he has his little ace in the hole pocket, which is a little person that knows something about rage. It's hidden in New Mexico. So that was our pretty good Avengers run for this week. So since I forgot earlier, I'm going to go around the room again. We have our Jimmy Kimmel, or Dave the Mad Hatter, and or just Josh.
Just Josh.
That's me.
All right. Okay. Jimmy, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right.
I know you have a big list.
I do, and I'll start off with what is usually kind of dedicated in the show for me bashing Dan's slot. And
your pick of the week.
Was my pick of the week until this morning. I actually have a different pick of the week, but Amazing Spider-Man 795, Threat Level Red, Dan Slott, Mike Hawthorne on art, and a beautiful Alex Ross cover. So the premise of this is Spider-Man now needs to go to Doctor Strange and see if he can kind of figure out some of the stuff that has been going on. He gets there and he notices, well, the entire mansion is floating. And he's like, well, this is a little weird. He goes in and Sorcerer Supreme is standing there, but as we know, it is no longer...
It's Loki.
Doctor Strange, it is Loki. So, basically, Loki says, listen, I kind of summoned you here because I owe you a favor, and the whole time Spider-Man's like, yeah, but, you know, what's the catch? You know, Doctor Strange always said, with any kind of magic like this, there's a catch, and kind of a nice little back and forth, and he eventually falls into a container that contains these alien wasp type creatures, and they escape. So now Loki and Spider-Man need to kind of go through the city and save the people from these wasps, and a stranger is stabbed by one of them, and basically Loki says, listen, I can make a antidote for this, but I need some of their venom, so you need to kill one. So kills one of this, makes the antidote up. In the meantime, they end up in the diner where Bobby Morse and Aunt May are having lunch waiting for Peter. Bobby just broke the news that her and Peter no longer are together, that really once they kind of no longer work together at Parker Industries, they realized the only thing they had in common was their work. So Spider-Man then comes out and Loki says, listen, had the antidote, but this one person couldn't save. But considering these wasps basically kill all organic life on an entire planet, one loss isn't that bad. Spider-Man says, no, it's unacceptable. I want my favor. I want you to take it back in time before I break this container. So Loki goes, okay, we'll do that. Go back, and Spider-Man's like, okay, we're equal now. Kind of leave me alone. And he leaves. Meanwhile, Loki's helper comes in and says, why did you move that out of the vault? You know it's very unsafe. Oh, yeah, I'll move it right back. So Loki planned all this to happen to kind of clear his debt with Spider-Man. And Loki the whole time is like, it's interesting how he could have had anything. He could have went back in time and got Parker Industries back. But he chose his favor to be the saving of a complete stranger. And Loki kind of plays it up like, oh, that's going to be a weakness for Spider-Man. So definitely some underlying things there going forward. And then we get to the last couple pages, the big reveal. Why this is the hottest book of the week right now is the first glimpse at the Red Goblin. Osborn, obviously, with the Carnage symbiote. And basically, it's him and the symbiote fighting for power. The Carnage symbiote's basically like, listen, we're killing everyone. And Norman's like, no, you work for me. And there's a battle back and forth. Some people are arguing this should be the first appearance. It's going to be the classic, is this the first appearance? Is this a cameo?
It's a cameo.
I call it a cameo. So whether it be 796 or 797, when the Red Goblin's actually shown, is going to be probably the hottest book of that week. And Paul said that they flew off the shelf this week.
Yeah.
Also with this, I have to give a shout out. This was one of the Hulk variants this week. Very cool cover.
Oh, the Dale Keown.
It's a Keown variant, I believe, yeah.
It's beautiful.
So,
it's actually a cover swipe of a Hulk issue, I believe. 390.
Yeah, but it's one he did.
Yeah. It's one he did. Yeah. It's awesome. I mean, you know, right up there with some of Keown's greatest work.
So, like I said, I don't know if it's that I've been beaten down by Dan Slott's terrible writing for so long that this seemed like such a good book. The writing was better than I think Slott's ever done. And there is a little note right in the front that, hey, this is Dan Slott's final hurrah after almost 10 years on Amazing Spider-Man. He's going down swinging. And I have to agree.
I was
going to
say, do you think it's because it's his last couple issues that he's turning up the juice?
Or? I think he's finally, like, he realizes, hey, if this flops status quo, if it doesn't, you know, at least I'm going out on a high note. So,
or he's just taking a character written by a better writer right now. Loki is Sorcerer's Dream from Doctor Strange.
It very well could be.
Don Cate, so it's possible. he's just trying to aid them a little bit.
But, you know, it's a good setup going to the big 800. So I definitely think it's worth pickup. And, you know, if you like the whole Green Goblin
Green Goblin's coming back.
Yeah, as the Red Goblin, so.
Yeah. Oh, as the Red Goblin or as Green Goblin?
See, I don't know. That's what they're
right now. It looks like they're saying that it's Green Goblin that he's coming back as, and that's the whole going down swinging. It's going to end in a Green Goblin fight because with 600 going into 700, you had a big fight going down with Octopus.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I don't know where that will leave Carnage then with the new movie coming out. I would only imagine that he's going to pop up more and more. Especially after that abysmal trailer, but we'll get to that in the media section.
Yeah, that was one thing I forgot to watch.
But that's my probably my one of my picks of the week. It isn't the pick of the week, but definitely a good read.
It was your surprise pick of the week.
It would have been my surprise pick of the week if not for what I read this morning.
All right, Mad Hatter.
All right, I'm going to roll into the She-Hulk. If you remember my last review, we're getting down to the last seven issues, I believe it. Ends at 69, I believe.
169, okay.
Yeah, so we're at 162 with this. So we got six more issues, seven more issues.
It's good.
I don't know,
it's
I can't math.
It's good that, you know, you do math good.
Yeah, I can't math. I went to Pine Grove, leave me alone. you know, if we couldn't count on our fingers and toes, you know, we were kind of out in the dark.
You can kind of do that on that one.
just say. Anyway, my last review of the She-Hulk from last issue was that it was abysmal. It was the end of the leader storyline. They could have done so much more with it. This one is a step up. It's the fallout from it.
Cover's good.
The cover is awesome.
And basically what this issue is Jen Walters thinks that, you know, she's losing control and basically seeks out her own Doc Samson, which is this lady named Flo who's been trying to help her with the PTS from, you know, the whole Thanos blowing a hole in her chest to the loss of Bruce and all that. So basically you see a whole mindscape in there where she's sitting on the couch and the big gray She-Hulk with the fluorescent green stripes is sitting next to her. And
that was going to be my question because the cover, is she going gray She-Hulk?
Well, it'll go there, and that's kind of what I didn't like, kind of what I did like with this book. But let's get to the synopsis because there was a lot of meat in it. Yeah, there are a couple one-liners that kind of made me chuckle. You know, her and the gray She-Hulk are sitting on the couch, and she's like, "You're out of control," and the gray Hulk's like, "I'm not out of control, you out of control," and, you know, because she's the savage version of this, this one. I like how they went into the whole psyche where there's different forms, you know, just like with the Bruce Banner Hulk, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Peter David run.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jen Walters gets that mad because the gray She-Hulk says that she's afraid of everything. And she's like, "I'm not afraid of anything." And she starts talking like the gray She-Hulk. Gray She-Hulk looks at her and goes, "No, make fun of me, I talk." You know, it was kind of like a little goofy one-liner, made me chuckle. But what it comes down to is Gray She-Hulk tells her right out, "You're afraid. You're afraid of everything anymore." And she's like, "I'm not." But then she starts realizing, "Oh, I had Thanos blow a hole in my chest," and it shows a scene of that. "And I came out of that coma, and I lost Bruce," culminating in her mind, seeing Bruce and telling Bruce, you know, she misses him. He's not here. She don't know what to do. She has really nobody that she can relate to with the whole Hulk thing, you know. And, you know, she can't really, she feels she can't do it without his guidance and, you know, him to kind of level her out because she was always the calm one. You know, they would interact back and forth. Ends up with a big battle between the gray Savage She-Hulk and green Banner Hulk in her mind. Ends, you know, and it's a throw back and forth. She's angry because Bruce is dead because he had it all planned out with Hawkeye that this was how he was going to take the Hulk out. You know, the arrow to the eye and everything. This is how he's going to stop. And it's basically Bruce saying to her, "You knew this is how it had to end. It had to happen this way. There was no way I could control it." And that's basically what she's afraid of. And he tells her, "You're a stronger person than I ever was mentally. You don't have the rage that I did," you know, the whole nine yards. And it basically ends with them hugging. Flip back to outside the mindscape, and the entire house is trashed. There's holes in the walls. There, you know, the couch is like hanging off the ceiling, and Jen looks around and she's like, "Well, that was unexpected." And then she looks down and it's the old green, you know, leotard purple and white She-Hulk sitting there. And so we're back to that form, and she's like, "Well, that's unexpected too," you know. And that's where they're leading into the next issue. I want to see if they take it. And, you know, She-Hulk has always been kind of a tongue-in-cheek version of the Hulk. You know, there was always that goofiness in the,
well,
you know,
not originally. Cause
not originally.
Savage
the Savage, but I mean, for, you know, so I want to see if they're actually going to end this on a banger, or if they're going to end it in a fizzle like the other series.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're kind of playing. I mean, the name of the mini run is Jen Walters Must Die. So do you think they'll pay off at the end with killing her off?
I don't know. I honestly think, because like I said, this is the end, the fallout from the Jen Walters Must Die, because the whole Jen Walters Must Die was
the Hulk's taking over.
Yeah, pretty much. And the leader trying to bring that out in her. So I don't know if that's going to end this story arc, or we're going to see that pop back up, or if we're just going to get another story arc for the last couple issues. Like I said, this, in my opinion, was probably one of the best in the last four issues of this.
Okay.
But still not great. You know, not, like, the only reason I'm keeping it is because I have the full run, and, you know, but seriously, if they step it up, I can actually, the way I see this leading is they're going to put her on another team. You know,
well, that's what they've done before.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. They're not getting, I don't think they're going to get rid of the character. I think she's just going to go into another team.
Okay. All right, Josh, any Marvel?
I do. One Marvel, and it's one I think we all read.
Okay.
So if you guys want to jump into that,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we can do that. Let's do it.
It's the Infinity Countdown number one, Adam Warlock. Who wrote this? I only read this like 15 minutes before we started.
Dugan wrote it.
Because this is why he might be getting off of Deadpool.
Right. Written by Dugan. Let me flip here, see if we've got artwork. Artist was Allred.
Yeah, it's Mike Allred.
Mike Allred.
Yeah, because Jimmy liked the art.
This was great. This is a Josh approved Marvel book because again I don't read a lot of Marvel.
Just Josh approved
because I'm aware of Adam Warlock. I know him from Infinity Gauntlet. That's pretty much the only book I've read that had him in it. So this was nice in the same sense that like X-Men Grand Design basically gave
the Cliff Notes version of what Adam Warlock
Thanos
is.
Did that recently for Thanos. I mean, I'm more familiar with
that's
Thanos.
That's exactly
but
what this book was.
That's why I like it a lot. That's why it gives the Just Josh stamp of approval.
If you didn't know enough about the history, it's all in here.
And it doesn't go into like great details, but it gives you just enough. Like
it's the greatest hits, basically.
Yeah. So I liked it for that reason. I had no idea this event was even happening, to be honest, because I don't really keep up with Marvel too much.
Realize an Infinity Countdown book was coming right before Infinity War?
especially when this is...
I don't like to read books that are basically sales tactics to get more people to go to see a movie.
But
because usually they end up being complete trash.
Well,
sometimes
it's more of there's merch for a hit movie, and now people can come into the comic stores and read something,
and
which is why you're seeing a lot of your characters change and why we're getting a new Valkyrie in the New Mutants.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Valkyrie from Ragnarok movie.
Well, I think also that, I think it kind of plays into the rumor that this is finally when him, Adam Warlock, is going to show up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's been teased twice at the end of the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then, again, the second in his Golden Cocoon. So,
yeah.
I mean... I hope he... I mean, it would make sense because he played a very pivotal role in...
Anything Infinity Gauntlet related?
Anything Infinity related.
Or Thanos related for the most part. But anyway, he basically gets pulled out of death, I guess, by Kang.
It's more... If you know anything about Warlock, he goes into a slumber...
Yeah, he doesn't
He doesn't die.
Right. But was he cracked open at the beginning? I can't remember. Kang
just cracked him open.
And brought him to the future.
Yeah.
I thought he just pulled him out of time somewhere. Well, I guess technically he did, but he kind of explained what's going on. Like, you know, I need your help with something. And he's like, well, let me get the Guardians of the Galaxy together and we can handle anything. He's like, well, no, it's too late now. So I'm going to send you back in time to a more appropriate time. And he's kind of explaining over his... He explains his, basically, greatest hits, which was nice. But then Adam realizes that we've probably done this before. He's like, yeah, this is going to be, like, the 113th attempt at this. So.
And it keeps failing, but we're trying something a little different.
Yeah. So I guess...
I was waiting for a good edit point.
That was not
that
it.
Wasn't
that
it.
Wasn't
it.
That wasn't it. I can edit right there.
So I guess he sends him back in time again. To ancient Egypt, and he has to find the soul gem and then trade it for the time gem or something like that?
Well, he needs to possess... So, basically, the thing is, someone's going to put the gauntlet together again.
Someone already has.
Already has. But he's like, if you possess this, you're going to have that step up.
Right.
And basically, he meets...
He meets with early Kang, who isn't even named Kang yet.
But he's like, oh, you become Kang. He's like, yeah, and, you know, we're told all about
you. We're ready for you. Come on with me.
He's like, I'm going to send you to the future, to the year 2018, and you're going to need to go to this star. He shows him in his constellium or whatever it's called. And he's like, well, I can't send you there using my power either, because if you time travel...
Someone's going to know because they have the power. I love the whole aspect of that.
And this is basically, we're going to do this hard way. So he just... shoves him into a sarcophagus and mummifies
him. Stabs
him
and basically, like, listen, we're slowing down your regeneration process. He's like, as two minions, he basically says, no one can know about this except for me. And
they
drink the great Kool-Aid and, you know, that building's destroyed. You know, I seriously was thrown in my hand this morning and said, you got to read this.
You're welcome.
I did see it had come out this week, but I thought it was just kind of another terrible Marvel event.
I like how when he says it's too late, he flashes to a picture of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they're just, like, everybody's just decimated.
Not just the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Everybody.
Avengers are there.
And they're just, you know, decimated, like, you know.
Well, they're all laying there. No one is torn apart other than Vision, I think. Always has his head ripped off in sort of.
And Wolverine's laying there with his claws out, but they're all bent.
Yeah, bent up. And
yeah, and then we get back. Then it jumps back to Kang, and he's like disintegrating in the future or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it shows his like lair or whatever, and there was like a like an astronaut skeleton with claws like Wolverine.
No, that's Weapon X.
Weapon X. So you had the Weapon X helmet.
Weapon X helmet.
But there's a lot of it. You see
The clock.
The clock. You see the angel.
Yeah, there was skeleton. Like it was similar to, I think it was.
It's basically like a trophy room for Kang.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a whole, like, Vision's head's hanging there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there was a
Sentinel
great
head in there.
A Sentinel head. It was just a great shot. You know.
But this sets up 2 weeks. Will be the next one, and that's Infinity Countdown.
Infinity Countdown.
And then after that, Darkhawk.
Yeah.
After that, and then we get into the actual Infinity Countdown series. So
hooray, Darkhawk again.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
That was, like I said, I think that was solely the internet that brought him back.
Absolutely. I know the little shout out to one of our groups online, Comic Book Collecting, on Facebook. They're taking credit single-handedly for the bump in Darkhawk 1 prices.
And you know what? I think...
They might be
40,000 members strong, and when they start hinting at, you know, Darkhawk might be in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, that book went from a $9 book up to $100, $150. Yeah. I cashed out. I bought two copies cheap, and I got rid of one for $125.
I did the same thing. I didn't get $125, but I got $100 out of mine.
So, I played into that. I'm not ashamed.
Well, okay.
But that was my pick of the week.
That's your pick of the week.
And that's why I made all of yous read it this morning.
All of yous? Okay. All right. Well,
Pinesville doesn't English too good either.
I know.
All yins.
Math or yeah, no, that's Pittsburgh.
Yins.
That's Pittsburgh.
Y'all, you guys.
Utes. Yeah, these two Utes.
That's New York. All right. So the next one on the Marvel train wagon, which actually will kind of even sort of segue from the Infinity Countdown, will be X-Men Red.
Yeah, let's do that one.
Tom Taylor and Mohamed Asra?
Yes. Yeah.
Art was awesome. Writing was great, I thought.
I mean, we kind of had a whole lot of... It's very political.
Yes, very much so.
And a lot of things that are mirroring what is going on.
Which kind of frames, I mean,
in
don't
real,
get wrong.
Real life?
You know, I like life, fictional mirroring life, but I don't want it to become a soapbox.
Yeah.
So you don't
I'm
want
not,
it to become a Dan Slott book?
Pretty much.
Yeah, so I don't know if...
God! You're so two-handed. Like, one minute you're singing his praises, and now you're going to just backhand him with
that. But that's my main complaint about him, is he has that social justice warrior type of writing style for 10 years on... Spider-Man and almost killed the title.
Yeah. But, I mean...
This one here, I don't know if it was too much on a soapbox. It actually plays into the story once we get to the end.
Yeah. Right.
And so, basically, with all of that, I was like, okay. But again, when you kind of get back into it, it is an X-Men book because that's what X-Men's really about.
Absolutely.
And
always has been.
And it always has been. And so we definitely get into that. And quite honestly... The ending's a kicker.
It is.
Yeah.
The ending's a big kicker in this book. So basically it's everything getting through just to get to the ending because now you're setting up what X-Men Red's going to be.
And Jean Grey basically, you know, she pulled in, it shows how Namor
Well, she's out of touch.
Yep.
She's out of touch with stuff because she's like, oh, all of this stuff is going on. She's been gone for so long.
It builds a new Cerebro, but it's not to find mutants. It's to find the greatest thinkers across the planet to kind of...
To help
her. Notice they spelled it differently, too.
Yeah.
And they were underwater and they called it Cerebro.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like the line in there when she goes to Namor, you know, I'm a king. I have, you know, responsibilities to my people. And she's like, I don't need an ally. I need a nation.
And she has the backing from both Atlantis
and Wakanda.
Yeah. And what I really liked is when she's up giving her speech to the UN, she's like, listen, we want mutants to have their voice as a united front. And they're like, well, you can't. You're not a country. And she's like, listen, we tried to do the whole, hey, we'll stay out of the world. We'll make our own country. And every time we do that, we just become a bigger target.
Right. Yeah. I thought it was a good read. I think it's a good setup.
Yeah, I think it's a good setup.
I would like to see just a little bit more of what happened right after Phoenix Saga. But that might be a flashback
issue.
Yeah,
you'll see some flashbacks.
Because to me, it seems like it took place even a couple months later than her coming back.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, it's definitely setting up what X-Men Red's going
to
be.
I like the fact that she's pulled Nightcrawler in. Mm-hmm. He was the first one to volunteer for the team.
Nightcrawler.
Because he's the voice of reason.
The new Wolverine. Honey Badger.
And Honey Badger, who is the clone of the clone.
Yeah.
All right, you're making my head hurt.
Well, yeah, she's a clone of Laura, who's a clone of Logan.
Wolverine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely a good read. I'm going to keep it on my pull list.
Absolutely.
Had a couple great variant covers. The Scotty Young cover is just awesome. I'm sorry. Who doesn't like Scotty Young covers?
Scotty?
I don't know why he calls him Scotty. It's Scotty, but...
Okay.
We'll be talking about him later. I got his
But
and everyone knows I'm a Scotty Young fan.
Right. Well, obviously. Yeah, I mean, you got, your top
right.
two.
So we're in agreement. X-Men Red was
absolutely
was decent.
And I guess the big reveal, I mean, seeing that our posting schedule, you should have read this before then. The big reveal at the end is going to be the first big bad for the series.
Yes.
Cassandra Nova.
Yep.
Who basically is controlling one of the UN representatives that talks to Jean Grey outside of the UN base.
And
says, listen, I had to keep up appearances, but I love what you're doing. And then Jean gets close to her, and her head explodes.
Well, it was kind of like that. She revealed herself right before,
right.
And then
her head was like,
But anyway, okay, all right. Do we have anything else on the Marvel front there, Mr. Jimmy?
The only other thing I have is Spider-Man. Deadpool, which is now being titled Spider-Man versus Deadpool. I don't know if that's going to stick or if that's just for the story arc. Basically, it picks up. The last issue was kind of a fun throwaway issue of the oldies one. I think they're going to alternate to kind of keep it fresh. But basically, Deadpool is looking to break into a former S.H.I.E.L.D. area called Area 14. And basically, Area 14 is a community, a suburb totally made up of LMDs. And they basically get in there. Spidey interrupts him and basically says, listen, you left me, you know, basically to die. You know, I'm going to show you. And basically they kind of have a little battle. They fight. Deadpool gets all the weapons, but Spider-Man walks away with almost like a computer chip, a controller, and is revealed that that isn't Spider-Man at all. It is actually Chameleon. And he basically flips to Spider-Man actually talking and saying, listen, you know, they have all these life model decoys that are offline that Chameleon wants for Project Doppelganger, but they can't be controlled without this. Last page reveal is of the controller that he actually has, so it looks like it's going to be Spider-Man and Deadpool coming together to fight life model decoys.
Hmm.
Robert Thompson and Chris Bachalo on art. This is, like I said, I love anything Deadpool, but this series has been constantly good. I mean, it has the quirkiness of them back and forth arguing. It has the Deadpool constantly, hey, he's great friends with Spider-Man, but at the same time, he likes the almighty dollar, so we'll screw him over in the end. But I'm interested to see where it's going to go.
Okay. All right, Dave, you're wrapping up Marvel?
I'm going to wrap up Marvel with another X-Men book because, hey, I'm your X-Men guy.
Yeah, I know.
This kicks off. The new story. Thanks.
And it's not blue, so we don't have to go into
right.
Like eight
we're not
going to
do eight different timelines. This
only
is this
five,
gold.
Only five different timelines.
Yeah.
This one.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, there's no timelines in this one, so F is all. this is actually the kickoff to the new story arc called Brotherhood. We got a great Dodato cover on this. This also had a Hulk variant, and there's another variant that I did not see. Apparently. So, great Dodato cover. Inside artwork is done by, let's see. Oh, doesn't give my inside artist. Just so, it might all be Dodato.
Here, I'll look. I'll let you know. I know it's art well.
Which it seems like, because I think the artwork in this is different from the last issue. It's very, like...
It's not Deodato. It's this Bernard.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's Guggenheim.
Right.
Oh, pencil. Diego Bernard.
Bernard, yeah.
Okay. Great artwork in this.
Yeah, looks good.
Super stellar artwork. We basically see, to kick this story off, a guy kneeling in rubble. And he's like, I can't believe I just did this. It's basically the Brooklyn Community College. And he's approached by Charles Xavier, of all people, who is dead, if anybody...
Yeah, I was going to say, is he long dead?
He even says, aren't you dead? And he said, no. He goes, you should know I'm an X-Men. We don't stay dead. And he stands up. And later it's revealed that this isn't really Charles Xavier. It's Mentallo. He's controlling him. Apparently this Simon has fire powers. And Mentallo says, you know, I knew a guy like you once. So it's basically Mentallo trying to reform the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. So he actually dresses him up like Pyro. He finds a guy that has the same powers as Avalanche, gives him an Avalanche suit. It cuts to a prison scene, because apparently they've been busted now. They're being controlled by collars to dampen their powers. And Mentallo comes to him. He goes, I bribed a guard, and, you know, we're going to get out of here. And they're like, no, we don't trust you. You mess with our mind, you know, blah, blah, blah. We don't want nothing to do with you. He goes, how about a chance at revenge? Because apparently he wants to go after the main protagonist, the Trask of this X-Men run, is a lady called Nance. She's basically outcrying for mutant registration again. We should, you know, get rid of the mutants, blah. You know, the whole nine yards X-Men story. And they end up breaking out. He's like, you know, and they're both like, how did you, you know, fix the collars? You know, he goes, it's easy when you bribe a guard. They walk up to the guards, and it shows, goes from one panel of them being in their prison office to the showing them in guard uniforms. He says, change of shift. He's like, I need to see your card. He goes, you don't need to see my card. He goes, I don't need to see your card. He swipes him out, and you see Simon going with a little Star Wars bump going, these aren't the droids you're looking for. And, you know, basically flashes Kitty Pryde, and, you know, Rachel's back out of the coma from the negative zone, Draven War, because she's been in a coma for a while. It shows them looking for her, and they find her on the roof, and all of a sudden she's got her hound markings back and is in a costume that's really, really hound-like, old Rachel Gray type. Yeah, it's spooky. They're all asking her if she's okay. She goes, no, I'm fine. I've never been better. She goes, it feels like I'm firing on all cylinders. There's no dampener. You know, we see Logan do the old Logan leave. Old man Logan's walking away. He gets, you know, a lightning bolt thrown right to his feet. And it's Storm. And she's like, you know, what the hell do you think you're doing? You know, she goes, he goes, I'm getting older. He goes, things ain't working like they used to. The negative zone war basically took it out of me. He goes, I'm not healing like I should. He goes, I'm a liability. He said, the team's only as strong as its weakest member, and I need to get out of here. She's like, well, what are you going to do? He goes, I don't know. He goes, I might travel to Canada, just hit Japan, maybe see some of my old stomping grounds, which ties into Old Man Logan, which we talked about last week, where he's in Madripoor now.
Has there ever been a series that has been better at, you know, a dozen of, you know, six of one, half dozen of another than the X-Men? They rehash storylines.
Oh, absolutely.
Repackage them like no one's business.
And you know, for
and us, change it up enough that
you want to read it.
Yeah.
You know, so basically it's the new Brotherhood going after this Nance. They end up attacking a yacht. And, you know, X-Men comes in. They basically get their butts whooped because, you know, Mentallo pretty much knocks out Rachel Summers, Wolverine's not there, you know, and all of a sudden you see Kitty Pryde, and she's like, you know, everybody else is down but her, and Avalanche has a hold of her, and he goes, go ahead and try to phase, you can't. I don't know if he's, like, vibrating on the same frequency or what, but, you know, he pretty much stops her. She's like, I just led my team into destruction, you know, and that's where it ends. You see Magic, Ileana, She gets taken out real quick because she just, you know, goes savage and wants to kill Mentallo because he had controlled her, and, you know, they pretty much get wiped clean.
So I guess my question is, where does this fall as far as I know we talk about timelines, we make fun of it, but isn't Nightcrawler a part of this team as well?
Nightcrawler is a part of this team at this point.
So this,
I don't know. This almost has to be before
Red.
Red. You know. So I don't know if we're going to see this lead in, and then, you know, a little bit down the road, we're going to see a big tie-in for all three, or if they're just going to do what they've been doing with X-Men Red and Blue, where there isn't much crossover, and basically you just take it at, you know, because Astonishing did the same thing. Astonishing is doing their own basic little storyline that doesn't really tie in.
Yeah, it's always kind of, you know.
And, I kind of like that because, you know, we had discussed it before. With Executioner Song, you had to have every title. You had to have Cable. You had to have X-Force. You had to have X-Factor. With the new X-Men Gold Runs, yeah, it seems like they're tying together. You got to read them all to get the story. But you don't. You know, you can read one title and, yeah, it might reference a little bit here, but you're not missing that big a piece of the story that it's going to affect your series.
Okay.
That will conclude our Marvel for the week.
That's concluding our Marvel, so we're going to take it over to DC Josh.
Yay. All right.
Are we changing his nickname from Just Josh to DC?
No, he'll always be Just Josh.
Just Josh.
I'm just going to talk about a quick one real quick. Justice League number 38. This is being written by Christopher Priest, and the art was by...
You said somebody else. There's a new writing team coming up, right?
Yes. Scott Snyder is going to be writing this
after the No Justice
miniseries.
Yeah.
Art by Marco Santucci. This is part three of the People versus Justice League, where basically we had the crazed fan who kind of wanted to smear the name of the Justice League. In their last encounter, they basically kicked his ass, but he retaliated by using the Watchtower's teleport system to teleport all the Justice League members at random places all over the world. They're kind of catching up, trying to find each other. You know, Wonder Woman ends up in Africa somewhere. Batman's frozen out in the Arctic, and Jessica Cruz comes out to rescue him, and she's like, how are you alive? It's like negative a billion degrees here or whatever. He's like, I have willpower, just like your ring has willpower, blah, blah, blah.
Cause I'm Batman.
Yeah. So the whole focus of the story is basically that Batman is the, I guess, the chairman of Justice League, and because of the events that occurred with the crazed fan and who they haven't found again yet, he feels that he probably shouldn't be necessarily the leader or the chairman. So they go. They all kind of
have they revealed who the crazed fan is?
Yes, a guy named Josh.
Oh,
remember that?
I was just wondering.
It was just a random guy.
I didn't know if you said or not. I was wondering if it was the.
Yeah,
his name
was Josh.
Named Josh. He was on a podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering if they
made fun of his nickname because it was just Josh.
I was wondering if they were going to play into the whole kid who slaughtered his
Justice
parents.
Justice Josh.
They all basically the rest of the league kind of like, hey man, you need to talk to your friend and tell him to kind of take a vacation. The guy doesn't sleep ever. We have monitors. He does not sleep. So
because he's Batman.
Yeah. And he's like, look, I'm not gonna do that. If he wants to do it, fine. But I mean, things aren't that bad yet, or whatever. Meanwhile, Barry's the only one that doesn't get involved at all in this story. I mean, he has his own side story this whole time, where basically a spaceship crashes or blows up next to the Watchtower. And he has to go do, like, a spacewalk to go rescue it, and then things go terribly wrong. And the whole time he's kind of just in his head talking about, like, I have to figure this out using science. I can't use the Speed Force here because it might rip apart my suit, and then I'll just die in the vacuum of space and all that stuff. This was probably the most Barry Allen we've seen in a while, which was nice. So while they're dealing with basically Justice League drama, we have Barry just...
hanging out in space.
Yeah, and like he can't communicate with any of them because the Watchtower's computers are kind of down because of the crazed fan. They all basically meet back up in time to rescue the Flash. He has to use the Speed Force at the very last second to jump across debris, and it, you know, disintegrates his spacesuit, and they catch him, but then they have to he's like frozen from the vacuum of space or whatever, but they're like, you're gonna be all right. You have speed force powers. You're gonna heal faster. Batman agrees.
Is that their equivalent of get up and walk it off?
Yeah, or? Run it off. He's the Flash.
Well, it's the same way as the Flash series. Every time he's hit by like Captain Cold
or shot with a bullet or whatever,
or it's like, oh, just vibrate and fix yourself.
Yeah. So Batman agrees to take a few weeks vacation, and on his way out, for whatever reason, and this kind of ties into Batman later on. Jessica Cruz goes up to him and says, "You know, things are going to get complicated," and then kisses him out of nowhere. And then as he's leaving, he's like, oh, by the way, because as per our charter, since I'm stepping down as chairman, I get to appoint the new one. It's going to be Cyborg, of all people.
Well, yeah, that does...
It makes sense.
Yeah.
But I feel like he is, at some point, because of the No Justice series coming out, and that Scott Snyder's coming back, and then Martian Manhunter was revealed not only in No Justice, but also Dark Knight's Metal, that I feel like Cyborg is going to step down at some point, and Martian Manhunter is going to make his return. And we're going to have Cyborg maybe back on Titans, maybe?
Well, I think it would be nice, though.
Which would be nice, because Titans is kind of crap right now. But.
Well, not only that, you now have Martian Manhunter having a purpose. You know, right. How do you bring him back in and actually give him, you know, storylines that actually matter? If he's
other
just
than fixing the Justice League.
Other than fixing the Justice League and kind of leading that, yeah.
The art was okay in this one. They dialed back, the artist definitely dialed back on the unnecessary lightning bolts on Barry's costume. Now, whether or not it's because he kind of has, like, a spacey costume thing going on. The like, grooves are still there, but it's not, like, there's just lightning coming off.
Maybe we vibrated them off.
Maybe. I like the art in this, other than the fact that Aquaman, who is back on the Justice League, by the way, because for a while during his title, he was stuck in Atlantis, so Mira was part of Justice League for a little bit. He randomly changes his costume to this blue one out of nowhere. Like, just one panel, it's regular Aquaman, and then all of a sudden he's wearing just this blue jumpsuit sort of thing. If you like The Flash, this is a good story for you, but if you like Justice League drama, then I guess the other parts for you as well. I don't know. I save the drama for the Titans and Teen Titans because they're children. Because, I mean, in Titans, the last issue we had, Justice League showed up and basically reprimanded them for doing not a 100% good job. And yet, in their own title,
they're screwing stuff up.
Ridiculous. So, I'm looking forward to Scott Snyder taking over. Christopher Priest is definitely a step up from Brian Hitch, but he hasn't... I mean, he's keeping it afloat, I guess, right now. That's all I can really say.
All right. What else do you got that we don't, Josh?
I've got Batman and Superman.
We have Batman, so...
Why don't you do your Superman and then...
Superman's going to be real quick, too, then. This is a new story called Last Days. Basically, it's the anniversary of Krypton blowing up. And I guess Superman always goes to the Fortress of Solitude and watches a recording of it to make himself sad. But John shows up and is like, hey, can I watch too? And he's like, well, I mean, this is your legacy. Sure, why not? So they're watching it blow up. And it was funny because Superman's like, hey, you know, it's tragic, but you need to learn about your heritage and where you came from.
And you need that history badge to become the Boy Scout that I am.
You need to know that I'm, you know, the last son of Krypton and all that. And John's like, well, I mean, what about Krypto? And what about Supergirl? And what about... He's like, shut up, John. They don't count. I thought that was really funny. But then a Krypton-like planet is going to blow up. Alarm goes off. And Superman explains that he built this alarm that will detect other planets that are about to repeat the same thing that happened to Krypton, so that he can stop it from happening. He's like, all right, son, I gotta go save this planet. And John's like, well, bring me along, because I'm a plucky kid that wants to get in trouble and cause issues. And Clark's like, well, all right, just don't tell your mother. So they fly off into space, and they get to this planet. It's like a mostly aquatic planet. Everyone is like seahorse people-looking things. They show up and
basically... Please tell me they look like sea monkeys.
No, they look like seahorses. But... We basically get a copy and paste story that we had in Green Lanterns a while ago, where they had to rescue a planet of people that were doomed, and the people on the planet did not want to be rescued for religious purposes. They're like, our God created us. If this is the way that he wants us to go out, then so be it.
It's the natural order of things.
Exactly.
Who are you to mess with that?
And they're like, you need to respect this. And Superman's like, no, I'm going to save you all. Screw you guys. So they attack him.
Another reason, if I ever had powers, I'd be a bad guy, because I'd be a good guy, and they'd be like that. Be like, Wash my hands of you, peace. But,
yeah, you can still be a good guy and be like that. Like, just okay, whatever. You know, see a peace.
The only difference is that these guys, I guess, have faith powers, and since the entire planet is sort of very religious, their faith weakens Superman and Superboy, so they have to kind of escape being killed by these people because they want to make them die on this planet too. They fight and eventually are rescued by one of the scientists on the planet who is like, "I need you guys to help me save my world." So again, there's a lot of parallels you can draw here. It wasn't the greatest story ever, but I guess we get like a seahorse version of Superman's origins.
Yay. I had read their end in that series.
Superman?
Yes.
I highly doubt that.
I just threw the rumor. I heard they're ending that run.
I mean, this is a good jumping on point, but I mean, every Superman book so far has been a good jumping on point. It's Superman. Yeah, everybody knows who Superman is, and they don't really stray from that too much other than in Action Comics a little bit, but this is not that, so.
Right.
Well, I guess that'll play right into the next DC book, Batman 40, Super Friends, Part 4.
Yep.
So, we pick up...
And, wow.
Yeah.
Just wow on this one.
We kind of pick up, and it kind of goes through... there's two storylines going on, obviously, Selina and the Gentleman, where Selina's like, listen, they've been there for years now, and she's like, well, I need to see my wife, you know.
Lied to him.
And that's where it is revealed that he wasn't truthful and didn't tell them that basically time travels, you know, like that. So it makes a lot more sense to the whole them almost kissing in the last issue.
Yeah.
Which is revealed they don't. Basically, Batman's like, listen, you know, I love Selina. It's not right, but, you know, I miss everybody. I miss, you know, my family. I miss my dog.
Which is great because Wonder Woman has the line, I miss my kangaroo.
And that is where they brought Jumpa back into the current run, yep. which get your Sensational Comics number 6 out because it's going to get a little bump. Yep. But
yeah, she's basically like, if we're not going to do this then, you know, I also love Steve Trevor. Yeah. And if you ever tried to do this, or if you ever hurt Selina in any way,
I'm gonna hit you so hard
that you're pointing at your ears fall off.
Yeah, that was great.
That was funny.
So basically, they're fighting the horde again, and it's everlasting. And basically, finally,
the back and forth between the whole thing, the whole time behind, is great though
because it jumped around. It was like 31 years in the future, 25 years in the future. But I believe it's 31 years is when they are finally saved.
Gentleman goes and sees his wife again, and spends another hour there, and then Selina's like, you know, how long have we been here? How long has it been there? And he's like, it's been another 10 years, it's at least. And she's like, look, you need to bring it back. You have to. And he's like, all right, I'll bring it back. So,
And I like during the whole horde fight, at one point Batman's ready to, I can't. And she, Wonder Woman picks him up and says, no, we do this together.
And
then the, flash to another 10 years later, it's the exact role reversal.
Yep. She's basically I can't do this. And he's like, well, we can do this.
So basically they are then returned to Earth. Batman basically says, listen, in a moment of weakness, I almost kissed, Wonder Woman. And Selina's like, listen, you're a man, you're fallible. Basically, next time you go and give him a break, I'm going with. And
yeah,
I think, and they basically say, well, maybe with three of us, the horde won't be so everlasting.
Yeah.
So a nice little wrap up of, I believe this is the last Super Friends they're doing.
Yes, and hold on to your hats. Believe it or not, this is actually my pick of the week. I loved this book.
I don't blame you. I mean, Joel Jones, again, I said the last time, or during this whole run, Joel Jones, I think, has been drawing this fantastic art. I absolutely love it. It's perfect for Batman.
And Tom King is just...
Oh, well, yeah, obviously, I mean, Tom King.
What else can be said?
All right, when you're done kneeling before Tom King,
Well, we can talk about another Tom King written one there and go into one I believe everybody has read. That would be the Swamp Thing Winter Special.
I have not.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to dedicate 80 pages.
Actually, I need to see who did the art on this one. It was pretty much touted off as the Len Wein, his final story, which was a Swamp Thing book that they were to relaunch.
We have two stories in this book.
Yeah, and then the very first one...
Is the Tom King one.
And the art is by Jacynth
Fabok.
Jason Fabok.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is it F-A-B-O? I'm going to say Fabok. Okay. Sounds like a Fabok. I don't know.
Fabok?
You want to put a disclaimer in here?
Disclaimer? No, no.
Well, if he's listening, he can come on and tell us how to pronounce his name correctly.
Yeah, he can give us a call. The Tom King story in this is quite actually special, spectacular.
Yeah, if there's beautiful. Anything Tom King's good at,
it's almost like the...
It is
it almost
beautiful,
seems like a tribute
moving.
To me. Almost like...
sure, it could
you know,
be, yeah.
You could read it like that, because it's basically, you know, him, Swamp Thing, traveling, trying to keep going and do his thing, and just never gets there and finally collapses at the end. Only to be reborn.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I think it's just a bit more of showing like what Swamp Thing is motivated to do, because he's looking to save the boy, but you know, as we find out in the end, the boy's what he is running from.
Right.
Yeah. And that the boy is actually the big snow monster that they're doing. And I knew something was up when there's a spot where he's like, okay, we have to cut off the rod on your foot, and, you know, then the next panel is...
He's standing just fine.
Yeah, he has both
also,
feet.
Also, the kid was always covered in snow.
Yeah.
Like, there's always snow on him. It's like...
Yeah. Even, like...
And they were after it for days.
There was a great scene where Swamp Thing just pulls his hand off, sets out of the ground.
His villain was the snow, because the snow was going to be destroying him, and he had to get rid of the snow to be able to get the green to come back. I mean, it was a beautiful story. The artwork was absolutely stunning.
Yeah. If there's anything Tom King's good at writing is like a sense of dread, you know, like something bad is going to happen, hopelessness and stuff like that. So you definitely felt this towards the end of it when you kind of come to the realization of what happened, and then they reveal it, and it's like, well, this is quintessential Tom King right here.
Yeah. It was quite amazing. This jumped up to my pick of the week, pretty much on the Tom King story, almost alone. As far as the Lem Ween special on there, as Josh and I had talked about earlier in this week, it's like, did you read it? Well, then I won't spoil it. But you actually get no text in the box. You get the pages drawn by Kelly Jones, which looks like Kelly Jones artwork, and it definitely that moody kind of horror kind of feel. And
great panels with Solomon Grundy.
And what I liked about it is that there was a lot of, you know, definitely mood stuff with this, and definitely had this sort of horror feel. And then, of course, you know, we're going through some stuff, and then, of course, you know, we kind of go back to, you know, Batman and Gotham stuff again with it. So I thought the Len Wein story was actually pretty cool. It could have been a really good, fun series had it been able to be completed. I think the way they did it in here is interesting. I think it's a nice homage.
Yeah, I like the preface they gave to it, and the reason they didn't have any text was basically they said, you know, Len had a piano in his house that he himself couldn't play, but he would always invite people over that could play, and he enjoyed listening to it. And then this was kind of like them having a piano that only Len could play, so they're not going to include the music, which would be his writing.
Would be the dialogue.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so.
So, but yeah, definitely very, very, very cool book this week. Really, really enjoyed it. Okay. Anything else on DC? Or we
Batman White Knight?
I have quite a few on DC, but we'll do White Knight first, because I believe Dave also read this.
I did.
Okay. White Knight, Sean Murphy and Matt Hollinsworth on this, and I guess it's kind of divided. Either you love this storyline or you really just meh about it. I know, Josh, I've fallen off of that.
It's not that it's bad, I just don't care.
Yeah, and I love the storyline.
I think the storyline's going great. Not to sound like a fanboy, but I mean, I don't think we've really had a bad story in any of the books.
No, and this one is very much a setup to the final three issues more than anything. Not a whole lot goes on as far as moving the needle, except till the end. But basically, Napier is still trying to deface Batman and just, like, constantly, like, listen, he's not really evil in the way he was evil, but he still is. And the surprising thing is he is now coughing up blood, so... Are these pills making him sick? And Harley basically says to him, listen, you need to.
Was it blood or was it just vomit? Because no. It says he vomits after he takes them sometimes.
But it's definitely blood. It's, but basically, Batman and Harley meet on the roof, and he's like, listen, I know he's up to something. He's still the Joker. You know that. But we, you know, we need to figure out what's going on because, you know, he crashed his own library. He, you know, is controlling these people by Clayface. He figures out that whole why they're being mind controlled. Then Harley basically says, listen, I know in the past, you know, we've helped out. And he's like, well, why do you think I've always taken it easy on you? Why do you think you've never spent a lot of time in Arkham? He's like, I can see the good in you, and you're the only thing that kept Joker from ever totally going off the edge. So nice little.
And I like the reference there when about Batman buying another dress or yep. whatever. And,
yeah, bought her. Know. Yeah, so it's very, you know, very well written. And then at the end, Batman and Dick kind of get into a confrontation about, you know, basically, Batman says, "Listen, you just want to for once prove me right." It's kind of that, you know, son beating the dad at basketball for the first time. That's kind of how Bruce lays it out for Dick, and they get into it.
Well, yeah, because you see Batgirl and Dick, mm-hmm. and they're with the task force.
Yeah.
They're chasing down, I forget who it is.
It's a bunch of the villains that right. are being mind-controlled. Basically, Batman intertwines, and it causes the bridge to collapse, yeah. and Gordon then says, listen, I don't care, we now want an arrest warrant out for Batman. So yep. that kind of sets up the original, if anyone remembers, the original one is Batman is in a cell locked up and Napier comes in and says, I need your help. So I can kind of see where that's going. I think Napier's going to realize that he can no longer take the pills and realizes that the jig's going to be up. And then I think he's going to realize that, hey, Batman is good for the city, even if his ways aren't.
Harley has this whole monologue about how both of them want the same thing and neither of them realize that they can't do it without the other one. They mm-hmm. need to do it together. Because she's like, when Batman's there talking to her and says, you know, I need your help to try and rein this in and stuff like that. She gives that whole speech, and then as Batman leaves, she turns around and Napier's there and she says, that was meant for you too.
Yeah. So, you know, very, I like the storyline being a standalone that's not going to affect other timelines and things like that.
You it's also a great see, name. Is it Batman go to Freeze and say, I want answers and flashes the
yeah,
pics?
That whole
Nazi
picture, you know, so. And Freeze basically says, I figured you were coming. You know, the Waynes have more secrets than you know of because they basically break into Wayne Mansion and go into a secret room that Batman didn't even know about. So,
right. I mean,
I think that's going to pay off as well. But again, I like that it's kind of contained in its own little universe, that it's not going to spill out into the other things, but it has enough similarities to the actual continuity that you can pull from it and go, yeah, I remember. Like I said, they mess up a little things to keep it interesting, but, you know, definitely an interesting book, and I'm looking forward to the last three, definitely. I think it's a must-read for a Batman fan.
Absolutely.
And are you done with DC, then?
I don't have anything else in DC.
I have three. I'm going to touch on two very quickly. The two Harley books this week, Harley 37, Angry Bird Part 1. Basically, Harley has moved away from Coney Island into the city, and she's created her own business, Harley for Hire. And basically, the whole ongoing gag throughout this is it's not an escort service, so people are constantly calling her for, like, the girlfriend experience and things like that.
Because who wouldn't?
Exactly. But basically, the big thing here is Penguin is moving into New York City. Basically, his reason is, well, there's no Batman here. All I have to worry about is Harley Quinn and Coney Island, but that's nothing. And at the end, it reveals that Killer Croc is on board with Penguin, and it basically, well, don't you have a connection because of Waller's Suicide Squad? And he's like, listen, you pay me. It doesn't matter. I'll get the job done. So, Frank Thierry and Mirka Andolfo on art. Definitely, like I said, it's interesting to see where they go with the new artist. Cho, again, with his covers, always awesome. But, like I said, I was going to give this a run with the new team to kind of see where it goes. I'm probably not going to continue reading it just because I'm more buying it for the covers, but it's keeping my interest enough to want to read the next one for now, so we'll see where it goes. And then the second one being Harley and Ivy Meet Betty and Veronica. This is number 5 of 6. Still a fun book, but it's kind of wearing thin on me. It's kind of one of those that I'm ready for the sixth and final one to kind of be over with. They finally switch bodies back, and basically they get to the point where the new villain, who was introduced earlier, Lenny the Lamper, basically is kind of a, I guess, Riverdale version of the Penguin. Very smart, very crafty, knows how to kind of get people to do his bidding. So was really interested in how his character kind of is developing, where they're going to go with it. But basically, it's still the battle over the swampland between Gotham and Riverdale, and them wanting to build the community college on the grounds, and Ivy wanting no part of it. And Ivy kind of betrays the team when she's like, I care about the swamp more than I care about any of you. And kind of leads into the last one. Like I said, kind of wearing thin on me, but I'm invested. I was already 4 issues in of a 6-part series. I'm not going to not read the last two, but if you haven't picked them up at this point, obviously you're not going to jump in halfway through. But if the trade comes out, I'd say it's a fun little read if you can read it in a trade. I think it'd definitely be better to read as a trade instead of a book that you have to wait between the issues. And then my final one of the week is my DC pick of the week is Red Arrow 37, Green Arrow 37, Fall of the Red Arrow. Ben Percy and Juan Ferreira on art. Picks up where we left off with Amico, the Red Arrow, being shot in the chest with an arrow. Oliver, like, basically saying, come on, stay with me. She opens her eyes up and is like, she's still with us, but we need to get her treatment. Moira, Malcolm Merlyn, and Shadow are still fighting amongst each other. And basically, the floor beneath them opens up and looks like it falls into a volcano or the center of the earth. And basically, Shadow tackles Moira into it and basically like, listen, you know, you just killed my daughter and I'm going to take you with me. I have nothing else to live for. And they kind of fall into the pit, leaving that open-ended of are they dead or not. Malcolm Merlyn gets the upper hand and is about to kill...
Hamster's falling off.
Canary.
There you go.
The Canary, and he gets shot in the hand, and Diggle reveals himself and basically says, I'm on Team Arrow, you know, you've helped me a lot, Malcolm, but they're doing good with this world where you're just out for it for yourself. Flip to the hospital, Amico wakes up, and Oliver kind of says, you know, listen, I should have been calling you the Red Arrow a long time ago, you know, you've earned it, you're a great member of this team. And he's like, but now he gets to court for the trial of a murder he's being accused of. It basically ends with a montage of all the Justice League members kind of watching it their own way. The Green Lantern has his ring projecting a screen, watching the trial, things like that. And he's basically like, listen, you know, I know a lot of people don't believe me, but if I'm going down for this, I'm going down swinging. And he's walking into the courtroom. So that's what the next one will pick up. But I think the best thing this series has done is gone to a monthly. Like I said, it was getting very, not difficult to read, but the content wasn't there like it was early in the run with it being bi-weekly. I think moving to monthly is going to do wonders for it. The art's amazing. Percy, I personally like his writing for it. So definitely if you're a Green Arrow fan, they're playing more into the show, bringing some elements of it in. But they're sticking with kind of the good elements. The brother-sister bond. Diggle, who I think is a great character, is even better in the books because he has that kind of double agent kind of thing going on, but now reveals that he's on Team Arrow. But definitely a good read, and I'd recommend it. And that
okay.
finishes up
that
DC.
Should be DC.
Mm-hmm. All right. So then that should bring us into Independence.
Yeah.
And I think we have a couple this week.
Yep.
Josh, you have one?
Yeah, this is my pick of the week. I Hate Fairyland number 16, created by Scotty Young.
Or Scotty.
Scotty. Scotty Young.
Don't make fun of the way I talk.
I really love this series because it is...
Over the top out there.
Yeah, you know. I mean, it's not even over the top. It's just really a cozy read. It's very cutesy, but in like an evil kind of way, like similar to... You know, like Invader Zim sort of stuff, or Squee and stuff like that. If you've ever read any of those, or seen the shows, essentially this picks up after its like third hiatus. Scotty usually writes about 5 issues and then takes like a 4 or 5 month hiatus. So the last issue that came out was in August, I believe, ended on a big cliffhanger, which was basically I mean, the story is basically about a little girl who gets sent to Fairyland, and it's everything every little girl would want. They have to go on a quest to, you know, meet all these fantastic creatures and people, and then they give them a key, and they leave and go home after, like, a week of adventure. She, however, is terrible at doing this quest, so she gets stuck there for 40-something years and goes crazy. Now she's this bloodthirsty psychopath who just is a no-nonsense, you know, if you get in her way, she's just gonna pull out a giant, you know, double-bladed axe and just cleave you in half. She, at some point, and pretty much everyone in Fairyland hates her. At some point, they bring in another child, thinking that if the other child can leave, then she'll no longer be considered a guest and be considered a denizen, and then they can kill her, because they can't kill her because she is protected. She's like a protected class. And they bring this other girl in who is perfect for the job. She is about to finish the quest, and then Gertrude, which is the girl's name, kills her. That happens earlier in the series, but essentially, this leads up to she at one point just loses her mind and says, "Screw it, I'm going to be as happy-go-lucky as I possibly can." And she finishes the quest in a matter of one issue, gets the key. She has a big lollipop in her mouth. She's walking towards the door. She trips, falls, and like the stick of the lollipop just pierces her head, and like her brain's exposed and stuff. She dies, and everyone's like, "Oh, this is terrible, kind of. What do we do now?" And it cuts to her being in Fairyland Hell, and sitting on the throne of Hell is the previous girl that she had killed. This picks up from that, and basically you find out that it's not technically that little girl. It's just this evil ruler of Fairyland, and he's like, "I'm going to do the worst possible thing to you." And he sends her back to the real world, and she meets her parents, and they're like, "Well, hey, you slept pretty long. I mean, we made breakfast for you." And she's like, "It's been so long since I've seen you guys. Like, well, you only took like an 8-hour nap." She has breakfast, and then all of a sudden her parents turn into demons, start torturing her, and it's revealed that he just wanted to mess with her mind to get a little bit. And she's like, "Look, you can't break me. I've been through it all thousands of times at this point." He's like, "Well, I'm going to do the worst possible thing I can think of to you then." And he sends her right back to Fairyland. She just falls right back to where she originally was, and she has no way out again. So we're picking up where we left off technically on a kind of lame cliffhanger, but more adventures in Fairyland with a super brutal 5-year-old girl that everyone fears. It's a lot of fun. The art is tremendous. You can definitely tell that Scotty Young likes this, like likes writing it. It's not typically like, It's not like he was assigned a book and he's just drawing for it. He created this. This is his baby. So the art is wonderful. So I highly recommend it. I'm glad you picked it up, Jimmy. So
for the next one, I will be able to have conversations about it.
Hear your thoughts.
But like I said, I'm a huge Scotty Young fan, so I'm all in. I believe the hiatus is basically so he can fill his Marvel orders, because I believe he has a ton of variant covers coming out in the next 2 to 3 months.
And I'm fine with the hiatus, because I mean, if it's Image anyway, you know you're going to get quality. It's not like he's rushed to get his stuff out. It's just whenever he gets around to it sort of thing. He'll write a story and then
I might actually have to pick some of those up.
It's a lot of fun.
It sounds like a fun book. Like, it just seems like it's up my alley.
If you want an introduction to the character without actually reading the book, there was an I Hate Image free comic book,
which was awesome.
Where she's the main character, but she's going around all the other Image universes and killing everybody, trying to get it. And the only person she ends up making friends with is Spawn, and they have a good time just killing everybody. It's good.
I actually got a copy of that signed by Scotty down in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Okay, and I believe that will bring us to the final book of the week, which was my pick of the week until I read Swamp Thing, which would be Walking Dead. And we have a pretty awesome Michonne cover as the variant.
The headshot covers that they're coming out with are just super spectacular.
Or how headshot covers should be done.
Yes.
Yeah. But basically, now we have more of our group, because as we find out at the end of the last one, the big reveal, which I don't think we spoiled
too bad.
The last one, is that Michonne's daughter is in the community.
And looking for Michonne.
And looking. They have a billboard that has pictures of, have you seen this
And on
person?
A side note, how old was her daughter when this all started?
I don't recall, but we had a time jump, though.
That's what I'm saying, because I always thought remember. She was very small. Because
literally, Michonne's story was in a 6-page Playboy issue, and that was her origin story, and about her daughter, and honestly, it never even occurred that there was a possibility that her daughter was alive.
Right.
Yeah, so that was the big shocker and the big reveal on Walking Dead last month. This one here, then, they... you know, Michonne breaks down crying and everything, and she's like, take me to her now. And
Hornsby's being just his typical dickish self.
Right. But she does end up showing quite an amount of restraint to be able to, you know, get to where she needs to go, and then talks to the governess, I guess is what we're going to probably end up calling her.
Yeah.
Did she actually refers to herself as the governor of... whatever this place is.
Yeah, the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
And basically they have this big conversation, and it finally gets down to where she sort of appeals to her motherly senses.
And basically
says,
listen, here's why I'm being like this. And the governor even says to her,
Oh my God,
I wouldn't have been able to show that much restraint.
Yeah.
I'm going to take you directly there.
Yeah.
And then they have the big meet up at the end, and have their
cakes
little
cakes get dropped, tears are shed.
Yep, have their
because
little
cakes were dropped. Oh, you mean tears in the comic?
No, yeah.
Okay, we're back on the same page.
Yeah. Dave saw cakes dropping. No, starts crying.
Yeah, all in slow motion too.
Yes, and so basically, we had the reunion with Michonne's daughter and Michonne, which is. Possibly going to make things quite interesting again, because I think it's going to change the Michonne character quite a bit.
Michonne tells her right out, I'm auditioning you more than you're auditioning me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, who says we want to be part of this community? We came here to see what you guys are, right. Whether you're a threat or not.
So, overall, liked it. There was a lot of the politics and stuff and back and forth.
Yeah.
And
you get a whole monologue about the machine.
You get a lot of that and everything else. But overall, I thought it was a pretty decent issue, especially for Walking Dead.
I'm just wondering if they're going to pick this story up pretty quick, because it's supposed to be a 6-issue arc with this whole New World Order. So is this going to be a slow-burning thing where they kind of just get assimilated into the Commonwealth first and then it's going to play off later, or is stuff going to take a turn really quick, because we are already 2 out of 6 through it?
Yes.
It just depends. I mean, it's not unlike what they've done before in the past with the larger world, and it's like, oh, here's this. I mean, are they all going to move into the Commonwealth? Who knows? You know, is it going to be another faction where, hey, the Commonwealth aren't good people? There's, I think, a little hint of that in this one. There is,
but it's almost like, okay, you know, you get, like, obviously, in our society, you have your sleazy, greasy, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, not good people.
It's not that kind of story.
You know,
I don't know what you're talking about.
And
yeah, I don't think Walking Dead has ever had characters like that.
But you know what I mean? Like, I'm not even talking about war. I'm talking about real life.
But
you
I'm thinking...
You're going to have that. You have, a 50,000-person strong community.
So if the whole community is bad, then
yeah,
have chance.
That's really bad.
Yeah,
like, you know, is this just, you know, or is this going to be like
corruption
okay,
at the top,
North, and then you know we got Virginia, you know, with Alexandria and that community, and that, you know, this is going to start creating.
Well, basically, the one thing that's interesting about the Commonwealth is the zombies aren't even up.
Have the zombies even been a thing? For a while now?
Not really.
Because I noticed
when people
talk about the show, the zombies aren't even really a threat.
Yeah,
other than
not
just like,
really,
but when they really need to move the plot along, zombies show up.
It's almost progressed that anybody who has survived really knows how to take them, and it's only unless you get like a herd or, you know, a big mass that it becomes a problem, or you get snuck up on.
Well, it's kind of like a theory on zombies. If there were an actual zombie apocalypse, whatever happened, is after a while, it'd just be like...
It won't, Jimmy. It's okay. It's never going to happen.
You don't know that?
You don't know.
We have an entire state of people that are already zombies. It's called California. And, you know, it would get to be, they're more of background than anything. It's like, you know, at one time, you know, bears and, you know, animals in the wilderness were killed people all the time, but we've evolved to a society that kind of, it's, you know, never really a danger. It'll never get like that in The Walking Dead, but it's kind of getting to the point.
But it did get like that in Shaun of the Dead. I mean, face it, after the zombie apocalypse in Shaun of the Dead, he kept his best mate chained up in the backyard and went out and played video games with him.
But that was a comedy.
It was a
comedy.
It's a zombie romance comedy.
Yeah, no.
Still probably my favorite zombie movie.
Absolutely.
Mine too. The next headshot cover by Bill Sienkiewicz is going to be the governor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, next one's actually the governor, and it looks like the way the governor's supposed to look like, not our TV
greasy,
governor.
Sleazy scumbag.
Yeah.
Basically just Danny Trejo?
Yeah.
No, not that good.
Oh, okay.
Not that good.
But one thing we forgot to mention is you got another sneak peek at Oblivion song in here.
Yeah.
Oh, was that in here too?
Yeah, it was in
here. I forgot since I read it. Oh, so anyway, yeah, what I have here is the first four issues of Oblivion song.
Which he's still holding out, not letting us read.
I have held out on this. So basically, Oblivion Song is going to be the next Kirkman book that they are making a big deal about. Now, the last time that happened was Outcast, and it did turn into a TV series almost immediately. Those sales still don't do, and those back issues still don't do anything like what The Walking Dead does. I think some people are going to be jumping on, going a little crazy on this. They're doing a few things for this. They have the first 12 issues done. I just got a letter.
Kirkman's other book, Invincible.
That's finished.
That's finished, right?
That's finished, or finishing. I think the last issue's coming out. I think that's the next issue. They have 12 issues done on Oblivion Song already, and basically, yeah, this absolutely could be another TV series. It's probably going to be a little expensive, but maybe Netflix will do it. I don't know. You know,
I was going to say
who he has a deal with. He has a deal with somebody.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for him to sell to AMC because they won't cut off Rick's hand because the CGI for that would be too expensive.
Yeah.
Is basically why Rick still has both hands in the series.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense than what he says. Yeah, he's like, I regret doing that. You know,
AMC is basically AMC like, listen, this already cost us a
shit
ton.
But we'll put a CGI tiger in.
Well, yeah. Well, and that's the whole reason why Frank Darabont, the reason he was taken off of that show was because he was shooting them like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why that first season, every episode is looks like a movie.
Wonderful. That's why I stopped watching.
And that's why people got into it, is because of that first season.
But Darabont wrote the second season, and right before they got shooting it, AMC went, hey, we can't do this. This costs us too much. So they axed them and then put in Mazzara, which is the big beginning of the downfall of when that show really goes to crap. And you know,
but
and
we'll
season
also
three.
Whoa.
Hey, not him.
Don't include me.
Well,
not him.
Just
he left.
Just Joss is
just
saying.
So,
just
but
saying.
With Oblivion Song, basically, they're in Philly, and basically something happens, and all of a sudden...
The Eagles win the Super Bowl.
Pretty much.
The Eagles win the Super Bowl, and then the sky opens up, and then that sends people into Oblivion. And basically, our main character runs back and forth in between these two worlds, and that's what he's pretty much doing, rescuing them. That's technically the sort of premise, but he's also looking for his brother. And so at first I was like, but after reading into the four issues, I'm a little more vested into the characters.
But we would have an opinion, but
I don't really care unless we can take a sneak peek at it.
Guess that just leaves us with media.
Okay, go ahead.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. taking a slight hiatus
for the
Olympics, which sucks because last week's episode was awesome.
Yeah, we had a lot of explosions.
They're now back from the future, so
they're now going back to time.
That's going
to complicate. We know why everything went bad, thanks to our seer.
Absolutely.
From the Kree guy, Cadus.
Cadus, yeah.
Yeah.
three trailers technically popped this week.
I wanted to watch them all, and I didn't get to watch
the latest Deadpool 2 trailer, and
was fantastic.
Which, those of you that have a New Mutants run, pull out your copies of New Mutants 99, because Shatterstar is definitely in the background. And
that is the buzz. Anything Shatterstar is buzzing right now.
And that issue was a $3 issue. I have, I think, 6 or 7 of them. They're going for $20 already on eBay. They have already jumped up. So depending on how big of a character he is, I think that's more of a setup for the New Mutants
movie. I had asked you this the other day when it first dropped. Did I see Cabal in there or not?
No.
Because there's a white-faced guy and he's bald and, you know, kind of has that whole old Cabal feel to him.
Maybe.
It was just a flash. It was only like on screen for a second, but I could have swore I saw him.
Speaking of the Super Bowl, where the Eagles triumphed over the evil empire of the Patriots, apparently it's hard to win the game when you don't have the other.
I like how you got it in your notes.
In case you forgot. I like to remind myself that the Eagles won the Super Bowl. But during that, the first solo trailer dropped, and it was awesome. It was stunning. It definitely makes me want to watch the movie, but at the same time, it's just kind of like, eh. A lot of things you're hearing about the movie that Disney's already kind of expecting this to be a break-even movie. They're not expecting
it. It's almost like, okay, we did the last night. Here's this. Just check it out.
Yeah. And then, speaking of trailers, the Venom trailer dropped, and it was awful.
In their defense, this wasn't really a trailer. It was a teaser.
It was awful.
It was all there about was no 20 seconds, and I agree with Jimmy. It was freaking hard.
And the director has come out and basically says, oh, all you internet people, you complain about anything.
God, here we go. Every time that happens, they have to retaliate against the internet, like they're going to change their mind.
Right. And basically,
you just look like a crybaby.
The best comment on top of that,
teaser trailers need to die. Just release the trailer.
Yeah.
I can't stand that.
And I think the best comment I've seen was, I think the Nerdist did a little video about it. It's like, well, if you don't want to put out a shitty trailer, maybe don't put out the trailer before you're done shooting the movie.
Seriously.
But honestly, I always had the theory that they had no intentions on making a Venom movie. They basically
announced it to drive up
the price of Sony, and basically Disney goes, we're not paying you for that. Go ahead and make your movie, and we'll show why we should have Spider-Man and not you. I think this movie's going to be awful. Tom Hardy, I don't think, is going to do enough to make this movie good.
We had talked about this when it first started happening. And I said Tom Hardy wasn't strong enough.
Yes,
his note says Venom trailer - poop.
And then last thing for media, Arrowverse. For those of you keeping up, Barry Allen is out of jail, but The Thinker is now killing off all the bus metas. So definitely an interesting dynamic on that show. And the other Arrowverse shows are keeping the status quo, and they're watchable, not always great, but definitely moving along. But Flash by far is the superior one, until I think next week is when Legends comes back on, which is probably my favorite of them all. So we'll see where that goes.
Monday nights,
yes, yeah. It'll be after Supergirl.
Another, I don't know if you have anything else in media, but for those of you that are into the Image stuff, Happy got greenlit for a second season.
Oh,
that should be dropping actually in a couple months.
Okay, cool.
I don't know if anybody here followed Happy. I loved it when it came out. In fact, I had read the trade. When it dropped for the TV show, I immediately ran out and bought the first four issues. Well, it is only a four-issue series.
Mm-hmm.
I grabbed the set as soon as I could before it jumped. Didn't really show that big a jump, but apparently people on TV liked it enough that it's going to a second season.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think that'll wrap up another episode on our Comic Book Rehab podcast. I'm Paul.
Jimmy Kimmel Live.
The Mad Hatter.
I'm just Josh.
And you've been listening to the Comic Book Rehab podcast. Take care.